Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect on this windy Friday. It is really blowing outside. I hope everybody's enjoying the warm weather. Looks like we're going to have some 80s early in the week next week. We've got a nice show for you today. A lot of investors are really nervous about what's going on in these very volatile markets, but our friend Brian Cochran, John Moore & Associates, is here with us, and Brian always brings us words of wisdom and words of calm. Brian, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Thank you, Jim. Glad to be back with you.
Well, I know, Brian, that you've been extra busy because I'm sure with your clients, they have questions every day. Our listeners have a lot of questions about the markets, and you know, they just, a lot of times we all just need to have somebody like a coach calming us down and telling us not to panic. So why don't you start, Brian, by just summarizing what's going on in the markets? It seems like we bottomed out, you know, here a month or so ago, and all of a sudden it looks like it's recovering a little bit. Why don't you give us an overview?
Yeah, it's incredible how much has changed since you and I spoke back on March 20th. That was the last time you and I had a chance to speak about the markets and what was going on. And a few of the concepts we shared at that time have come true in a sense. And one of those concepts is that the market tends to get better before the news gets better. Mm. So far, the stock market bottomed out on March 23rd. So just a couple days after you and I spoke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the COVID-19 cases in the U.S., if they have truly peaked, did not peak for about another 2 weeks after that. Mm. So the news certainly trailed the markets. And I actually saw some activity on social media where people were questioning how could the stock market be up while, you know, we're getting thousands of reported deaths due to this virus. And one of the things we always try to teach people is the market is always looking forward to what's coming next. They're not waiting to hear how many COVID cases today are coming through. They're looking at what might this look like in 3 or 6 months or even a year. So we've seen a pretty rapid recovery. So the market from the peak to that March 23rd bottom had retracted by about a third. So about a 33% loss if you look at the S&P 500, which is a broad-based index that we often use to represent the market. And since then, we've made up about half of those losses. So The market's already bounced back and recovered half of what was lost in that rapid decline from early February to late March. So it's been a wild ride, you know, with that elevator shaft drop and then so far a pretty steady uptick.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've never been a real fan of roller coasters, physical or metaphorical. And it just seems like everything happening is so unpredictable. And that's really with everything in our lives. The only thing that seems to be a constant is faith and Jesus himself and bringing us calm and getting us to understand that we're here together and we're fellowshipping. And you know, one of the things, Brian, that I appreciate about your contributions to our program is that here on ABQ Connect, we're connected to most of the faith community. We have people from virtually every church, every denomination throughout Bernalillo County, Sandoval County, Valencia County, primarily central New Mexico. And it's amazing. Santa Fe County, too. I know Santa Fe gets our signal pretty well. But people have really come together and they've thought about each other and they're contemplating, you know, how can we help? How can we do things? You mentioned that when people get the stimulus check money, the $1,000 that everybody should be receiving, you suggested in that show, I think that was back on our March 20th show, that people really think about not necessarily socking that away, but trying to use that money to invest in the economy. And right now, it sounds like the markets are anticipating things starting to open up. I know there's still a bunch of debates. We've just had our governor say that she's going to keep the stay-at-home order in place basically to May 15th, which is a little bit longer. And, you know, anytime anybody makes a decision, I know Georgia's governor's decided he's going to open up various things and he's being criticized. Our governor's being criticized for not opening up things. I mean, no matter what position any leader takes, they're going to get half the people, shouting at them. It reminds me of our days in basketball, Brian. There's always half the people that don't like the calls on the floor, but you're anticipating from a business perspective that you know, the markets are going to open up, and the markets look now like they're anticipating that happening. Exactly when, we don't know. How do you guys look at the market data and how the numbers are evolving?
Sure. So we take several different approaches. So the first thing we do is every week, we start every week with a Monday morning investment committee where we run numbers over the weekend. We have a quantitative consultant who basically runs our numbers based on a proprietary system that we have. And so we're looking at the same data points every week, and we've been doing that for 20-plus years. So we start to get a sense of what the markets look like today versus circumstances months ago or years ago or during the last recession in 2009. We can compare those numbers. And what our numbers were showing us back about the time that you and I spoke in March was that it was the lowest stock valuation we'd seen. It's even lower than 2009 when the market bottomed during the last recession. So it was telling us that in the short term, this looked like a once-in-a-decade sort of buying opportunity as the market was bottoming out. And the numbers have continued to evolve since then because we've seen higher stock prices since then. But also what's happening now is analysts, so there's different analysts from different investment firms that are always following company reports and talking to CFOs, trying to get a sense of what's coming next. Analysts are starting to project in what corporate profits might look like over this quarter, next quarter, and into 2021 even. And what they're showing is a really negative second quarter, which is, you know, April, May, June of this year, which makes sense because that's in the heat of this shutdown. Somewhat negative in the third quarter, maybe getting back to break even or a little bit positive earnings in the fourth quarter, but we may not see the same profit levels we saw in 2019 until maybe first quarter 2021 or second quarter. So what the market's priced in right now, I think, when you talked about the recovery we've seen, is probably two things. It's probably first pricing in that the worst case scenarios that were projected early in the year will not be happening. When I say worst case scenarios, that was the discussion of, you know, 30 to 100 million people being infected in the U.S. That just doesn't seem probable at this point. So you can rule that out. The market started to recover. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think the reason the stock market's bounced back even before the economy has opened back up is investors are starting to look out to, you know, third and fourth quarter 2020 and even into 2021 and seeing that there may be a light at the end of the tunnel.
Brian, you had a quote on the 20th when we last spoke. You said something like, time in the market is more important than timing the market. Explain what you meant by that.
Yeah, so a lot of people really get caught up on, is this a good day to be in the market? Is this the right time? You know, is it too late to buy? Because the market has now recovered much of the loss that we saw in the last couple months. And people obsess over getting the exact right time to enter the market. And what we like to say is, you know, your overall time, your experience of investing over a long period is much more important. Because even dramatic moves like what we've just experienced and what we're still in the middle of, those tend to look very small and insignificant when you get out far enough from them. So as traumatic, for example, as 2008, 2009 was for people who are invested during that period, we look back on that and we realize, wow, things have really recovered well since then, and any fear I felt at that point maybe was not as, you know, was not justified or was not as reasonable as I thought it was. So we really just need to give ourselves enough time to let this play out. So for, you know, especially our younger investors, we're telling them, treat this as a buying opportunity. Now, if you're going to try to trade short-term in the markets, we have such a high level of uncertainty still, that's going to be very difficult. But for someone who can own stocks for 5, 10, 20-plus years at this point, I think it's really a good time to be getting into the market and participating in the long-term uptrend of innovation and growth in the market.
So, Brian, as you look at all these data points, what's your biggest takeaway right now? I mean, you've already said this is a buying opportunity. So are you really trying to encourage long-term investors to come up with a plan now? Kind of tell us what that process is.
Yeah, so hopefully if you're working with an advisor or if you're building your own plan somehow, you know, hopefully you have a plan that's already in action. And a plan often constitutes consistent, steady buying into the market, what we call dollar cost averaging, where you put the same amount to work, you know, every paycheck in your 401k or every month as you stow away money for your retirement or your other long-term goals. And what the benefit of that is when you dollar cost average is when the markets are higher priced, you're buying less shares. And when the market's lower priced, you're buying more shares, but you're always consistently saving with a long-term goal. So anybody who has that sort of a plan in place, our recommendation is stick with the plan. You know, ride this out, stick with the plan. For folks who maybe need some short-term liquidity, some money available today, that's where it gets more difficult. Any short-term money should not have been in the market anyway. And if it is, you get put in a corner with some tough decisions about, you know, again, timing the market. When is the best time to raise that cash? But our, you know, if you have not had a good long-term plan put in place, this is a shock that might motivate you to put a steady plan in place where you can consistently save to a long-term goal rather than be so focused on short-term.
Right. Well, Brian, we're talking a lot about the stock markets, and I know you also have advised people on, you know, precious metals and other commodities and other aspects mm-hmm. of the market. But I know you're also a real estate owner and recently bought a house. And I was surprised when I talked with one of our sponsors and a contributor to our program, Holly Slade. She told us that the inventory now of homes has gone down so low that there's just not much for people to select from, and the prices of homes are really going up even during in the midst of this crisis.
Yeah, we experienced that personally. So we did buy a home, and when we went to sell our house, I didn't really know what to expect. And we ended up selling our house within 48 hours for above asking price.
Wow.
We had 9 people look at the house in the first day and had multiple offers. So I think it is a testament to the low inventory. The other thing is a lot of people right now are out of work. You know, you have 25 million plus unemployed people in the country right now. But there are a lot of people who do still have incomes that are still moving into new jobs and proceeding as planned. So there's still people in motion. There's still people who want a place to live. And there are still, you know, the majority of Americans still do have some source of income right now, if not all the income they had before. So there are still people willing to buy. So the residential market, I think, will take a while to shake out just because real estate tends to move a little more slowly than stock prices, just because it takes, you know, there's more timeline to the transactions there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen a decrease in mortgage applications for home purchases and some of those things that show that there will be less buyers at some point. But overall, that market's held up just on the back of low inventory, as you explained it.
Mm. Brian, I know you've probably shifted a little bit about how you're talking with customers. You're probably doing that remotely on the phone. I don't know if you're mm-hmm. using any of these video techniques and things, but do you see some of that application and deployment of technology as a positive in increasing your ability to communicate with customers even once this COVID thing is gone?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've been following the stories about. How will business look after this is done? As a business owner, I want to make sure I'm always on the forefront of changes in our industry and how people interact. And one of the nice things about this is it has forced some of our maybe less technology savvy clients to at least try out using tools like Zoom, which is the one we use
mm-hmm.
For our team. We add some extra security features to make sure that we're taking care of client privacy. But the you know, the circumstances have forced us to use those tools and found them to be very effective. We hosted a webinar a couple weeks ago. We had almost 100 clients attend that. Some of those had never been on a web meeting before. So I think a lot of people are being exposed and getting more comfortable to the technology. And if that's the case, I think it might be something people don't feel so intimidated by even after this is settled in.
Brian, I want to
be a good boost.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question. It's a little bit off script, but I just want you to compare some of these self-investing tools, online mm-hmm. investment tools, with the services that you provide at John Moore Associates.
Yeah, I'm actually preparing a presentation right now for some young investors through another organization, and this was something I was hoping to discuss with them because it's really a different investment environment than my parents might have been exposed to when they started investing years ago. And there's just such a broad range now, everything from do-it-yourself apps where you can buy and sell stocks for free, and you can maybe be a little speculative there if you'd like and be very aggressive in how you trade stocks. So that's much more of the short-term mentality. And there's some great tools out there to do that. One thing I have been following, though, is there are a lot of people that were hyped up and excited about stocks early in the year, and there was a lot of speculative activity on some of those apps that people are learning some very hard lessons about market investing as this is playing out, and we've seen so much volatility. So there's tools like that where you can do it yourself, and they give you a lot of resources oftentimes to do your own research. What I find for a lot of investors is that's a good way to invest, maybe a small, what we call playpen account, where you can play with investing and learn some lessons with a small portion of your portfolio. But for most investors, we're not equipped with the knowledge or the principles and processes that we would use as professionals. Most smaller investors don't have that backbone and that foundation to go out and do it on their own. And then there's some great just direct investing opportunities with different companies like Vanguard and Fidelity, where you can keep it really simple and just buy a few mutual funds and just participate in the market. And those are great tools that have evolved through technology over the last decade and have really been enhanced, where the average investor can get into the market without having to go through a provider such as myself that might give them more direct advice. Mm. The problem with all that is you get access to the markets, but you don't have, again, the processes, the principles, the wisdom it takes to be consistent in your outcomes, and there's no one standing between you and a potentially bad emotional decision and making a big mistake when you get fearful or overly greedy. And so part of our role is just to be a barrier between our clients and potential bad decisions they might make with their money.
Well, and Brian, the last few times you've been on the air with us, you've talked to us about the volatility in the market and making emotional mm-hmm. decisions, and you've really balanced us out so that we can have some confidence that the plan that was in place is the plan we ought to stick with. And you've also encouraged us that, hey, maybe you haven't been in the market, you haven't done a lot of investing, and we're going to talk a little bit about you encouraging people to get involved with their 401ks and matchings, you know, amounts that their employer might give, and just starting to build up some savings. So when we come back, Brian Cochran will give us a little bit more information about that. And then later in the program, we'll be talking about the government and his thoughts about the relief packages and stimulus monies and all these different things. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. You have heard a word a lot here of late, and that word is essential. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, our master certified technicians understand that your car, truck, or SUV is essential to getting you from point A to point B. We are open for business. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And don't forget that we have free towing with repairs. Just call for details. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. We are located on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's in Rio Rancho. And I'm here to tell you that the most essential thing in this life is the cross of Jesus. There is absolutely nothing more important to you and I. God saw you as essential and gave His only begotten Son, that you would believe in Him and have eternal life. Never minimize the cross. It's the centerpiece of the gospel, and never forget the hope you and I have in the empty tomb. I'm John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of old school gimmicks and games while shopping for a new car, then experience something new school at Power Ford. We'll give you a better deal and a better experience. The better deal part? We'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. The better experience part? You rated us Best of the City and Ford Dealer of the Year. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back with ABQ Connect and John Moore Associates financial planner Brian Cochran. Brian, I'm so glad to have you on the station, and I hope everything's going well with your family and you guys are safe and sound. How you doing having the kids at home, and your wife's probably doing about 100,000 things at one time and multitasking, right?
Yeah, it's been a change. We've kind of settled into it now after a few weeks, and I was worried the kids would be driving each other crazy and driving mom crazy and jumping into my office and interrupting meetings, but we've sort of settled in, and the kids are actually getting along really well, and
Great.
We're trying to find opportunities to get out and exercise to keep their, you know, energy going to good use. I like to say having young boys is like having a puppy.
Yeah.
They're more better behaved when they've been run around a little bit, so we're trying to stay active. We're just used to a very quick pace of life with lots of, you know, music lessons and sports practices, so to have all that come to a screeching halt was a big change, but we found a nice pattern, and I've talked to a lot of other families who are actually finding this as an opportunity to reconnect as a family, and we're creating some habits that are helping us do that.
You know, I know you're a big sports guy, so I know we're shooting some hoops in the driveway a little bit, but I don't know if you happen to hear the show yesterday. I had Dr. Brian Nixon. He's an assistant pastor at Calvary Albuquerque, and he's a musician and an artist. He's a painter and a poet. And we had a show yesterday where we were just talking about all these really cool resources for not just kids, but adults, just understanding the arts and how many Christians are involved in producing all this really beautiful art, everything from music to paintings to sculpture to poetry and stories. And it was just kind of a neat show, but it was fun because during this time we're all trying to be creative about what we do with our kids and even what we do with our own time. So are you still able to shoot it a little bit?
Yeah, we found a little time, and we go outside and practice our dribbling and just try to stay somewhat fresh. And we've already got the kids looking forward to football season next year, so that's the other sport we're into. So we're getting out and throwing the football around a little bit, and you know, it's just anything to do to stay busy. But we also took up, we started playing a game of Risk this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a game that takes a lot of time, so it's a good time killer getting that board game out. And we were warned by some friends who got into that it's not the best for your family relationships. And I found that out because I was getting a lot of dirty looks throughout the evening after I dominated the three other people in the household in a game of Risk. So I had to be a little more humble, not rub it in too much.
That's a war game. Great game. A lot of fun. And it makes you think. You have to think through things. But there are alliances that can be formed by the other members of your family, and they may just all come against Dad.
Yeah, I think that may happen the next time we pull that game out. So I might stall a little bit. Maybe we can do Monopoly or something else next time.
Brian, were you surprised by any of this crash or you know, downturn in the market, how quickly it happened, how quickly unemployment claims were filed? Has this surprised you, or is this something that maybe data shows in past experience, even though we've never had a pandemic like this, at least in the last, you know, 100-plus years, that are we handling it well, or is it just surprising what has happened?
I think there's definitely some surprises. Anybody who says that they knew that any part of this was going to play out as it has, or they knew this was coming, I think is stretching the truth a bit. You know, I think the surprising component to us was when we were having those double-digit market moves, you know, 8 and 10%. Moves in the market on some of those trading days. That's probably the most extreme and unusual part of all this. You know, the market, you know, every bear market, every downturn like this is different in its cause, but the reactions are generally the same. And I would say in this one, that was the one exception, that we had so many days of trading at 5% or higher volatility, up or down days, especially during the month of March. Other than that, a lot of the characteristics of what we're seeing for investors in the markets look quite similar to other bear markets. And whether it's the rapid rebound, or as I mentioned before, that the market moved up before the news got better, a lot of the characteristics are actually playing out the same. So in some ways, we're not surprised, and we're still able to rely on historical principles of investing through downturns.
Brian, I've got an email from a listener that sent in an email, mm-hmm. and what she's basically asking is, she's saying, how can oil prices go into the negative? Can you explain what we're looking at when we look at oil prices?
Yeah, so that was a complex combination of events that happened in this last week or so. Basically, oil prices were driven down by a combination of High supply, just because production's been fairly strong, combined with a complete elimination of demand, for the most part, where people simply aren't driving, people aren't using energy resources at the level they were a few months ago. So that drove oil prices low, and it got to the point where actually there was no one wanted to take oil, no one wanted to secure oil contracts because there was no place to put it, and it was more expensive to increase their storage facilities than it was to keep the oil. So basically what happened and where we got to the negative place was people had to pay someone else, basically, was the concept, to take the oil off their hands because they didn't have a place to put it. So
wow.
Increased usage, or decreased production, both of those things can help with that. We've already seen the oil rig count drop dramatically. So the activity in the oil fields, it takes a while to catch up. So the production will drop, and the usage, hopefully, as the economy starts to slowly open up, we'll start to see more usage, and that should level back out. And we're seeing that in the prices and contracts for upcoming oil in the next few months.
Well, of course,
but Brian, that's one of the facts.
Yeah. Well, I'm told that a barrel of oil priced below $40 will not allow producers in New Mexico to produce oil at a profit. So right now we're way below that. I think we're below $20 today. And what do you see that doing for revenues for the state of New Mexico? And Michelle Lujan Grisham was already having a budget problem. This all happened immediately after the legislature had approved a budget. And she was warned by a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that, you know, increasing the budget by $1.7 billion was not necessarily a great idea, that she couldn't count on oil and gas revenues, and then, of course, just the bottom's totally fallen out of it.
Yeah. And I could see both sides of what we've seen play out with the state budget. You know, there were a lot of people talking about how this oil boom that we've been experiencing over the last several years due to fracking and new technologies, horizontal drilling, that we would have a consistent oil boom for a very long time. Of course, again, no one could have predicted what's played out over the last few months. There are a lot of people at the state level were being led to believe that these revenues were going to be somewhat consistent. Like you said, even with that in mind, a lot of people were warning, hey, don't go on this spending spree that the state certainly went on over the last few years. And some of those were good investments that are hard to argue with, you know, things in education and healthcare, other places. But they're definitely going to have to reverse course because this, from what we've heard on the oil market, this is not going to be a short-lived factor, and it could be one of the headwinds for the overall economy and stock market if the energy market cannot continue, because there's millions of jobs associated with energy throughout that system that if we don't see higher oil prices and productivity go back online in a profitable way, that market could be slow to recover, and that could be damaging to New Mexico and other oil-producing states for maybe a couple years even.
Brian Cochran, John Moore and Associates, Certified Financial Planner, talking to us about the markets. When we come back, we're going to talk about some words like bailout, which I know Brian doesn't like. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
Dr. Tony Evans says Satan is not only busy attacking individual lives, he's working out his agenda on a much bigger scale. He'll explain today as we spend 2 minutes with Tony.
Satan is behind the princes of nations, provoking them, empowering them to destroy whole nations and groups of people. When you understand he wants you as an individual, then he wants your family, then he wants the church that's supposed to be the light to the world, and then he wants the society to run it down, you understand that we're in a spiritual battle. And it's more than who you elect and which congressman is representing you in the state or in the national legislative body of Congress or in the state legislature, which senator. It has to do with the spiritual issue of Satan and God. And until you can trace back your personal POW status, your family POW status, your church's POW status, or your society's POW status back to the spiritual conflict, Satan got you because he's got you wrestling against flesh and blood. And not against principalities, powers, world forces that are located where? Heavenly places. Many of you here today are still reeling from the spiritual warfare you grew up under as a child. Many of you are here are reeling today because you've been made a prisoner of war of self-esteem. Because your parents were being used of the evil one to beat you down and to let you know you were nothing, are nothing, never going to be anything. You became trapped in that prisoner of war status, and now you think like a prisoner of war because you've been living in that cell so long. And so that's the battle we face.
If you need help breaking free from whatever Satan has used to keep you tied down, visit us at TonyEvans.org for details on Tony's book called Warfare. That's TonyEvans.org. Then join us next time for 2 Minutes with Tony.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I want to tell you a little bit about the KNKT Star 88 Heroes campaign. From firefighters, police officers, doctors, and retail workers, heroes are on the front lines all over New Mexico during this pandemic. At our radio stations, we want to give them a shout out of thanks. We really do thank all of you for being on the front lines and risking life and limb and taking care of our communities and our children and our parents. And it's just an amazing thing. We are dropping off food items and treats in the name of our stations and you, our listening family. The Heroes campaign is sponsored by Monroe's Restaurant and Latitudes, and they're doing some amazing things to just bless people. I also want to tell you a little bit about Sergio's Bakery and Cafe. How does a homemade white or chocolate cake with buttercream frosting, an editable image, and your written message sound? I'm going to give this cake away from Sergio's Bakery and Cafe. They are located at 2740 Wyoming Boulevard in the Fidelity Shopping Center. I will give this cake away to the first caller. Call us at 505-338-5790. All you have to do is give Tim your name, and we'll get you a certificate to go down and have a fresh baked, homemade baked cake from Sergio's Bakery and Cafe. So give us a call at 338-5790. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, on the phone with us this afternoon. Brian, I had to give away some cakes and talk about our heroes, so I appreciate your patience there.
I love it. It's amazing to hear the things people are doing right now to go out and support one another. The best example I've heard is a young man that my wife went to college or went to high school with. He was sewing face masks and selling them online, which is in itself a great thing.
Uh-huh.
He was using the proceeds to go to local restaurants and buy gift cards to support those restaurants.
Wow.
And then he was turning around and giving those gift cards to medical personnel and first responders. So he was getting three layers of impact with his time that he had to sew these face masks. So it's just all the great stories out there are pretty inspiring.
You know, and people are just giving time and money and doing all they can do to help other people. So I'm really blessed by that. I also want to ask you a little bit, Brian, about John Moore Associates. I'd love for you, before we start talking about some of these federal things, tell us a little bit about your company and maybe some of the resources on your website that are available to people.
Sure. So we've been in business as an independent firm for 23 years. Our independence means that we're not owned by a bank or an insurance company, so it allows us to hold out our Christian values in the workplace, which is a blessing, and to be very objective in the advice we give to clients. We have two offices. We were started here in Albuquerque, and we started an office in Arizona about almost 8 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So we really enjoy having both locations, and we have 9 team members that all work together, and every client of ours is a client of the team, not just a client of one advisor. So a lot of collaboration. A lot of synchrony in our team that is always to the benefit of our clients. And we have a strong emphasis on generosity. So we're always talking about concepts around generosity. Of course, never telling our clients where to give or how much to give, but trying to equip them to be generous and to cheer them on and encourage them as they move from hopefully scarcity to abundance and generosity as we walk beside them. It's really a great privilege we have.
Brian, in your personal experience, I know it's never a motivation to donate money in order to get back a lot of money. But in your experience, when people are generous, don't you see God blessing them?
Oh, absolutely. And I've heard a lot of stories where people actually feel like they've received even financial blessings because they were generous, blessings to their business or their personal finances, but even just the emotional reward that people receive when they give to others, give of their time, give of their resources, there's just that immediate injection. And it's an injection of joy and gratitude. So it's something that we encourage with our clients, not just because we think it's a way to live out biblical principles, but it's a lot of fun, and we'd love to see our clients experience that joy.
Brian, John Moore Associates spends some money on KNKT as a sponsor of our programming. You guys sponsor the Money Wise program, which is heard right before Skip Heitzik comes on the air every afternoon, Monday through Friday here. Tell us why you underwrite that show and maybe a little bit about Kingdom Builders.
Yeah, so it's Kingdom Advisors is the organization that we're part of, and we're members of Kingdom Advisors, and several of our team members have gone through the certified Kingdom Advisor training where we're educated on the application of biblical principles in the financial advice we give. And there are certified Kingdom Advisors that are financial planners like us, but also attorneys and CPAs. And you can go to the Kingdom Advisors website, kingdomadvisors.com, and actually do a search for local advisors who have that certification. And it's a national organization with 3,000 members and growing rapidly. So Kingdom Advisors helps underwrite the MoneyWise program, which for those of you who haven't heard it here on KNKT, it's an absolutely outstanding program which teaches financial principles with a biblical worldview. And the reason we like to support that is it's our strong belief that God's principles were given to us as a gift because they work and they help us live out a more content and successful financial life. And there's a lot of encouragement there to be generous, to think of others when it comes to our resources. And we just think that's a great message to share in the community.
Well, I'm on your website right now, John Morris, johnmorris.com. So it's johnmoore.com. And I noticed there's some tools like under insights. You talk a little bit about five principles for downturn markets, the economic side of COVID-19, a webinar. Tell us a little bit about these tools, and are these free for people to access?
Yes, and you can access that anytime, and we've been trying to put a little bit more content up on our insights page over the last couple months. One of those resources you mentioned, that webinar, is with one of our favorite economists. His name is Fritz Meyer out of Denver. That was really well received by our clients, and it's available there for anybody who'd like to watch. Not only does Fritz provide an economic update there, but I also provide a very high-level outline of some of the personal and individual incentives that were given out and relief pieces that were given out through the CARES Act that was passed last month. So some good content there, and then I periodically write a piece up there that we share what we're seeing in the markets or some basic financial principles that we think might be valuable.
What's this I see here, our emergency preparedness plan, and the first thing you mentioned is that you need to have a basketball? Is that?
Yeah, we wanted to make sure our clients knew that we were ready if we had to work from home, and that was before we actually had to execute on that. So I'm glad we were prepared. Yeah, that's part of our regulatory requirements, is to be prepared for times like this. And we often complain about regulations, but we were reminded through all this that those regs are there for a reason. So.
Well, and, you know, I'm making a joke, obviously, and probably our listeners are tired because they know I love basketball and I'm always making jokes about it. But the truth is that, boy, going and shooting a couple balls in the driveway is very therapeutic during these times. And I know there's people that love to run and there's people that like to bike. And I think a lot of folks are still getting out and maintaining social spacing and everything, but they're getting out of the house. And it's important. It's important to do some things, stay safe, follow all the rules and the regulations, and just be smart. And we hope that everybody will stay safe. And I want to ask you now, Brian, a little bit about your thoughts about the federal government and things coming out. I mentioned before the break that the word bailout isn't really a term that you like very much in regard to these days and times.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people like the word bailout because they think that businesses are being sort of rescued. And the reason I don't like the bailout terminology is bailout to me implies that someone did something wrong and now we're saving them even though they maybe don't deserve it. And bailout was a common terminology during the 2008 financial crisis because the banks had maybe done some things that weren't in the community's best interest, and then we saved them anyway. And one of the things people forget is most of the funds given to the banks during that period were actually paid back with interest. So there was a bailout, but it was paid back. And the reason I definitely don't like the bailout terminology today is I don't know that the results of what we're seeing right now economically was anybody's fault. This is very much an engineered recession. We chose a recession over a worse effect from the pandemic. And so the fact that the government chose to shut down and that it wasn't any individual company's fault, I don't think a bailout's the right terminology.
Brian, do you see any data talking about the relief money that was going out to people and individuals? Are those checks starting to be received, and do we see or feel that money in the market yet?
So, yes, the money's out. It's starting to land in people's bank accounts. We've heard a lot from people that are getting direct deposits. So if you'd filed your taxes electronically and made a payment or received a refund through a direct deposit, that's all there. So that's starting to show up and being used. And Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, they did a study on credit card transactions, and they could tell who had received the funds based on bank activity. And there was an immediate spike in those who had received the relief funds, a dramatic increase in their spending. So this money's out there starting to make its way in the economy, which is a good thing. Good thing for the families that received it, but also a good thing for the businesses that are seeing that as cash flow.
Talk to us a little bit about where you see employers going. Are people actually looking to hire, or is it going to be pretty skinny as far as job growth in the next 3 or 4 months?
That's one of the big uncertainties right now, because I hear both sides of it. I hear some people say they had to lay people off and it's going to be hard to say when they can bring people back on. But also I hear, for example, I have a few friends that are dentists, and they are just chomping at the bit. They cannot wait to open back up because they have all kinds of work to be done, and they want to keep their people employed. And as soon as they get the green light, not only will they be busy, they'll be as busy as they've ever been. And so you'll hear of stories like that where people will be fully employed based on the company. So it really depends on what type of company. I think some of the areas you'll see struggle, as we talked about before, would be the energy market, which might not recover with everything else, and then the travel industry, hotels, airlines, places like that, where even if business is allowed to open, I don't know that you'll see a lot of people racing to book flights and hotels. So there'll be some slowdown there that might take longer to recover. But I think in some ways this is where we might have some positive surprises, is depending on how each state handles this, we might see more people going off the unemployment rolls faster than we might have expected. We'll have to see.
Brian Cochran is on the phone with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. He is with John Moore Associates, a certified financial planner. Brian also sits on the board of the Christian Foundation, and he's also the chairman of the board of the True North Financial Ministries. We're going to come back and talk to him a little bit about his work on these foundations and nonprofit ministries when we come back. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a safe haven for these children by making a tax-deductible donation online at azzhkids.org or by calling us at 898-5520.
Since 1970, the Albuquerque Christian Children's Home has provided a loving, safe Christian home for children in need. April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. When you give to Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, you help provide a home to children in our community who need a safe, loving environment. To find out more, call Albuquerque Christian Children's Home at 898-5520 or give securely online at acchkids.org. That's acchkids.org.
You're my father. I don't even know how to talk to you. I never have.
The new bilingual movie Tiger Tail, now streaming on Netflix, tells a story about a man named Pin Jui. Though he feels stuck in his working class life in Taiwan, Pinjuice got a head full of dreams about a better life in America, but things don't turn out as he'd hoped. This introspective drama quietly emphasizes two takeaways, the importance of wise decisions and the need to look forward in hope instead of backwards in regret. Some profanities and sensuality are the main issues here, so we're giving Tiger Tail a 3 out of 5 for family friendliness. You can read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. Plugging you into the movies, I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
How do you deal with sin? The first step is facing facts. Skip Heitchik gets real about sin in this hotspot.
The Bible talks about confessing your sin, right? If you confess your sin, He is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. So admit your sin. Take responsibility for it. Own it. Don't blame shift.
After we admit our sin, we must leave it.
That's repentance. Turn from it. Make a clean break from it. When I was a kid growing up in the Catholic Church, I sinned all week long because I could go to confession at the end of the week.
Get more teachings from Skip at connectwithskip.com.
Now admit it, then leave it. By God's grace and God's power, make a clean break, go in the opposite direction.
Follow the Connect with Skip Heitzig podcast on Spotify. And now,
replace it. The book of Romans talks all about that. Don't be overcome by evil, overcome evil with good. Develop new activities, new habits, new disciplines.
Hotspot.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
John Moore, Associate Certified Financial Planner Brian Cochran, said on this show on March 20th, "What a time to trust God, assess priorities, and spend extra time with family and be generous to people in need." Brian, it's a great quote. You still feel that way?
Absolutely. And my hope is that with the relief money that's showing up to some families right now, maybe they have a little extra margin to bless others. And that's one thing we're definitely talking to our clients about and promoting every chance we get, is to take those relief funds you may have received. And if you don't need them for day-to-day necessities, don't sit on that money. Get it out there in the community through spending and giving so that others can benefit from it.
So, Brian, I want to clarify one thing. I've obviously been taking notes as we talk, and it raises questions that I hadn't written down in our plan sheet. But I see that when you talk about the way the market is priced, stocks in particular, that these stocks are priced forward in anticipation of things that they now forecast as happening. Is it kind of like the odds makers when you're betting on sports, or is this more based on a lot of empirical data and more easy to trust it?
I think everyone's doing the best they can to digest the information. In some ways, it's like the odds makers. I try not to compare investing to gambling, because gambling, either you double your money usually or you lose everything. And that's not what we're doing here. We're trying to pay the most fair price possible to own something. That's when you buy stock, you're buying shares, you're buying a piece of a company. So you're not gambling with the money, you are participating in the ownership of that entity. And so what everyone's trying to figure out every day as stock prices move is, with all the ever-changing data that we're all taking in and interpreting, how does that impact the value of a company? And so people are trying to see what's coming up with that company and how might it change over time. So, what we like to say is the market trades on expectations, expectations for the economy, expectations for each industry and then each company. So everybody's expecting something, and then where markets go higher or lower is when we either have good news that raises those expectations or bad news that misses our expectations and disappoints.
I was reading an article this morning in the Albuquerque Journal, and it talks about the second round of the PPP funding, which is basically money intended to help companies with their payroll, will be a race, to quote their headline. So they are anticipating that this money, I guess just approved finally this morning, is going to go like crazy.
Yeah, it's going to go quick. And in a way, that's a good thing. One of the concerns when the PPP program, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a program designed to help smaller businesses keep people employed and keep their rent paid while the economy is shut down. Most of the money is not landing in larger companies, but the idea of the PPP program was to get that money out to those businesses quickly, and a lot of people were skeptical because they were worried about the Small Business Administration's ability to process those loans. And actually what we ended up with was almost the opposite, where the money went, not only went out, but went out so fast that they ran out very quickly, and it proved that there was a lot of demand for this money, and it also proved that we can get it out quickly. So the second round was signed off by the president just a couple hours ago. And there's another $300+ billion going to our small businesses, which a lot of that's going to, you know, help keep them afloat, and a lot of that's going to pass through to employees. One thing that people don't understand, I keep hearing again the bailout language on this. The way that loan works is the loan is forgivable to the extent that it's used to pay for your rent and your utilities and your salaries. Mm-hmm. So if you use that money for something else, it's a loan that will be paid back with interest. So it's really being pushed and incentivized to go right to rent and to employees.
And what I understand from a couple bankers that I've spoken with, that if you take 75% of what you're given with this PPP loan, that's supposed to go to payroll and supporting employees during this time of crisis, and that you can use about 25% of the loan for rent and some of those other things. And then
correct,
if you are able to verify that, then the loan will be forgiven, and that's sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it is, and it keeps the money in the hands of the smaller businesses. It keeps the money flowing. Now, the Federal Reserve has its own activity, and they're trying to keep liquidity high so that larger companies that need support, they maybe can't access the PPP loan, but they can go out and get debt through the bond market and borrow that way. And so some large organizations like cruise lines, hotels, airlines can go out and tap into those markets, markets that the average Joe, you know, business our size can't go out and issue bonds and then put them out on the open market. So that's all happening so that all levels are getting support, because we have people employed at all levels that we want to keep their households afloat.
Brian, I've got another email now from a listener. And by the way, if listeners want to contact me, they can send me an email at jim@abqconnect.online. And, of course, if you want to listen to the show after we are done with our live show today, you can always pick it up on the podcast. That's abqconnect.online. Brian and all of his visits with us, I think you've done 5 or 6 with us now, are all available and archived, and you can even download the audio if you just don't want to listen to it on the podcast. So lots of tools for people. Brian, I want to ask you a little bit, I guess I'll go to this question. The question, it's not really framed as a question, more of a statement, but I'm going to turn it into a question. This person has some precious metals, some silver and some gold, and she is surprised that the value of those precious metals has not increased as she would have expected in this type of volatile stock market.
Yep, and, you know, we've been talking to clients with gold as long as I've been in the industry. And gold is hyped up a lot. It's sold very aggressively by certain channels and radio stations and TV. They push it as this fear metal, and it's going to go up whenever there's bad things that happen. And it's not always the case. And a lot of people have been talking about fears of inflation with all the money that's flowing. We're actually right now probably more concerned about deflation because the lack of economic activity. And there's not going to be any wage pressure for a while now, which is one of the primary sources of inflation. So I think it's a source of a lot of misinformation that gold is just an automatic winner whenever there's times of risk and volatility. And I don't think that listener is by any means alone in being disappointed in the gold returns. Now, gold has certainly held up better than the stock market over the last few months. That's without question. But it still has not hit its peak value that we saw back in, I believe it was in 2011, is when gold peaked, when it was really being hyped up, and it was closer to $1,900 an ounce compared to today. It's about $1,700. I think it has to do with the fact that in the end we may not see high inflation, and people right now are really focused on having liquidity, so there's a lot of people in cash rather than things like precious metals.
Brian, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left, but I can't help but have you maybe restate for us, as you have in past shows, about the effectiveness of investing based on politics. How dangerous is that?
Well, I think that's going to be a big issue in the coming months, because our expectation when we talk about markets and what's coming up, we try not to be prophets. You know, the biblical penalty for prophecy gone wrong is death by stoning. And when you live in a city surrounded by xeriscaping and rocks, I don't think that's a good thing to partake in. But I wouldn't be surprised, let's put it that way, if the news goes from focusing on the virus, and when that starts to subside, it'll go to focusing on the economic impacts, and then we're very quickly going to transition to election news. And what I would say is the markets are so unpredictable. We just talked about it with gold, that it doesn't always play out the way you think it will. And some people are going to try to project certain political outcomes and see what that's going to do to the market. What I'll tell you is the market cares much less about politics than you think. What drives stock prices is earnings. What's going to be important is how are corporate profits going to evolve over the next 6 months to a couple years. That's what's going to drive stock prices. And a good example of that is in 2016, I saw anywhere between 80 and 90% probability that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. That didn't pan out. And almost everybody I saw making comments about the market said, if Trump happens to get elected, that slim possibility, look for the market to tank. And that's what everybody said leading up to 2016, and the exact opposite happened. So I would be very careful about trading investments based on politics, because a lot of people are going to say a lot of things and make bold predictions. It'll be the same people that got it wrong before. And it's going to be very hard to judge a market outcome based on a political result.
Brian, you sent me something in your email this morning called universal basic income. What is that?
Yeah, so it's something you're going to hear more about, I think, in the coming months, because it was a concept put out by some of the Democratic candidates during the primaries. And universal basic income is the idea that every citizen in a country would receive some fixed amount of income each month. And it's one of the ways that people want to fight the move towards automation. If people don't have manufacturing jobs or truck driving jobs, as automation takes over, a lot of people have thrown out this idea that let's just give everybody a basic paycheck and they can live off that. And then if you can go earn income beyond that, that's great. So taxes would go up and then everybody would get a base income. And the reason that's being floated now is people are saying, look at what we're doing right now with these relief payments, what we're doing with extra bonuses for unemployment benefits. We're basically providing a form of a universal basic income. And there's a strong debate going on there. So I think it's just something we need to be aware of that's going to be continually talked about, not just through this election cycle, but others. And there's definitely some huge trade-offs to that when it comes to work incentives and tax rates and other things. But it's something that I think we all need to be prepared to be on the forefront for the next several years.
So, Brian, we're in the middle of this. You're looking for, say you're a person that maybe have been furloughed. Should you be looking for a job? Should you just try to endure the next few weeks? What are things you can do to be proactive and taking care of yourself financially?
Well, I think there will be job opportunities coming out of this. I was reading a commentary from someone recently who had put out an offer for a $20 an hour job for 20 hours a week just to start getting some workers back into his business, and several people that came in and interviewed decided not to take the job because they were worried it would compromise their unemployment benefits. It's one of the negative unintended consequences of unemployment benefits. And what I would say is, if for those of you who are out of work right now, I think there are opportunities. You just have to maybe be creative in the short term, but be thinking long term, in the sense that long gaps of employment where you're not working won't bode well for you if you don't get back in the workforce soon.
Thank you, Brian Cochran. John Moore Associates, Certified Financial Planner. Always appreciate your insights, Brian, and your gentle, compassionate spirit. Thank you, my friend.
Always my pleasure, Jim. We'll talk to you again soon.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.